Dangerous Assignment, starring Lloyd Burrell as Steve Mitchell.
Yeah, danger is my assignment. I get sent to a lot of places I can't even pronounce. They all spell the same thing, though. Trouble. But when I walk into the commissioner's office, I don't realize this assignment's going to prove that sometimes a guy who tries to take somebody for a ride ends up getting taken. Morning, Commissioner. You sent for me?
The Blue Lion has sent us another guest, Steve.
The Blue Lion?
Mm-hmm. Pub in London. Acting on a tip, we arrested a man on his arrival here last night. His passport and other identification were forged. He's the fifth illegal entry we've picked up in a month.
So how does the Blue Lion fit into the picture?
And that's where these people picked up their phony passports. They don't know or won't tell us any more than that.
I guess that calls for a visit to the Blue Lion, huh?
Mm-hmm. Scotland Yard's given the place a clean bill of health, Steve. The owners are well-known, respectable, and I doubt that the man behind this racket is still using the place as a rendezvous since so many of his clients have been arrested.
Any other leads, Commissioner?
A very slim one, Steve. Our forger is a master penman. Very clever. Been in the business for years. We don't know who he is, but his work is, shall we say, distinctive. The trained eye of an expert can spot his artwork immediately.
This is a lead?
Several days ago, a crew of workmen found a small package behind some loose bricks in the basement of a house on St. Margaret's Mews in London. The package, wrapped in newspaper, contained half a dozen forged passports.
Identified as our friend's work?
Right.
I see. So if I can find out who put that package there, I might find our master penman.
Exactly.
And the date on that newspaper, Commissioner?
Brace yourself, Steve. April 29th. 1945.
You mean that package was hidden away all that time?
Right. I know it's a long shot and a cold trail, but we've nothing else to go on. Get over there, Steve. Check with Inspector Jellicoe of Scotland Yard. Find out what you can about that house in St. Margaret's Mews. Pick up the trail and nail the man who's running this passport racket. Well, that's it. You've got your assignment. Good luck.
Wrapped in an old newspaper. A package that was found hidden away in the basement of an old house. It's late Thursday afternoon when my plane lands. I head for Scotland Yard, the office of Inspector Jellicoe.
Here's a brief history of the house, Mr. Mitchell. A list of occupants and owners past and present.
Look, Inspector, about the newspaper, the wrapping on the package that was found in the basement.
Yes, I have it just in here, Mr. Mitchell.
Huh? Thank you. Is there any possibility the package might have been hidden away in the house during, say, the past year?
Hardly. You see, Mr. Mitchell, the house in St. Margaret's Mews was severely damaged during the war years. A good deal of repair work was done in the basement in the latter part of 1945. New walls, reinforcements, and so on.
I see. And the package was found behind the new construction work.
That's right.
Exactly when did this repair job begin, do you know?
Let me see now. Yes, here we are. The work was begun in August of 1945.
And this newspaper is dated April 45. Well, that narrows it down to roughly 3 months when it could have been put there. I wonder why the package wasn't removed during that time, why he didn't come back for it.
Well, it's hard to say.
Who owned the house then, Inspector?
Oh, it's in the report here. Let me see. Ah, yes, yes, Ian Mackay, second cousin of Sir John Stoker.
Lived there alone?
He was with the Royal Air Force at the time. living at the house with his wife, Emily, two youngsters, Ronald and Valerie.
Any servants?
Yes, three. An elderly couple named Denny, a maid named Clara Fitzsimmons.
Where are they now, do you know?
Well, Ian McKay was killed in a plane crash in 1946. His wife remarried 3 years later and is now living in Canada. The children are with her. The Dennys are both dead. And as for the maid Clara, well, we haven't been able to track her down yet.
Who could have had access to that basement other than the people living in the house?
Anyone in the whole of London, Mr. Mitchell.
What?
Yes. You see, it was used for a time as an air raid shelter.
Oh, great. Well, let's get back to the item you were wondering about, Inspector. Why was the package stashed away there in the first place? Any ideas?
Well, let's examine this possibility. The person carrying the package believes he's being followed.
Uh-huh, the police, and he doesn't want to get caught with the evidence on him.
Yes, so he slips into the air raid shelter. It's deserted. He finds a place to hide the package, slips out again.
This piece of newspaper seems to back up that line of thinking, Inspector.
Oh, you've noticed that, have you?
Yeah, sure. Here we have a single sheet torn from the rest of the newspaper, and what is it? Part of the want ad section. Up at the top of the page is the tail end of the column Rooms to Let.
Indicating that our friend, aware he was being followed, was seeking a change of address. You'll notice the last six listings in that column have London addresses. And there are some pencil marks beside them.
It'd be too much to expect to find him still living in one of these rooming houses after all these years. It might give me a lead.
That's right.
I'll take a crack at it, Inspector. You have any plans?
I thought I'd drop round to the Blue Lion Inn, check with the man I have there, and then go on trying to track down that maid of the Mackays, Clara Fitzsimmons.
Good idea. See you later, Inspector. The odds on our long shot are growing. The chances I'll find the gent I'm after look slimmer by the minute as I start out with my list of addresses. The first one is a bust. The same goes for the next address and the next. Things must have been tough in April. Four down and two to go. Now it starts to rain. I rush on to the next place, 61 New Romney Road. The landlady, a rather large one, greets me at the door. There's a pleasant air about her. And that air includes a faint trace of gin. She invites me into the parlor, and I settle down into a heavy, overstuffed chair.
1945, you say? Well, now, dearie, that's going to take a bit of thinking, I'm afraid.
You don't keep a record of your boarders, Mrs. Farland?
Never bothered to. Might I offer you a little nip of something? I always have a small glass before supper. Helps the appetite, you know.
Well, thanks, but I'll skip this round if you don't mind.
It also takes the chill out of one's bones. Oh, it's nasty weather out, isn't it, dearie?
Yes, so it is. Now, about this advertisement, Mrs. Farland, that appeared in the paper on April 29th, 1945.
Right. Don't seem to recall it at the moment, but if you say so...
Here's a copy of the paper.
Oh, yes. So I see. 1945. Oh, we did it proper, if you know what I mean. 45 was a nasty year. It was dreadful. Them Nazi bombers overhead day and night.
I'm trying to locate a man who might have answered this ad, Mrs. Farland.
But that was several years ago, dear.
Oh, I know. It's going back a long time, but there's something in the back page of this paper that might spark your memory. It's a continuation of a story regarding Mussolini.
Oh, him. What about him?
He was killed at Lake Como the day before, April 28th, 1945.
Was he really?
That's right. Help any?
Of course it does. I remember it clear as crystal, I do. Stella and a young man were supping with us. They just got married.
Stella?
One of me roomers. Been with me for 5 years and not... Half a mo now. It was Stella's room was advertised in the papers. Of course it was. It all comes back to me now. I rented the room the very next day.
And do you recall who took that room, Mrs. Farland?
Oh, I'll never forget it, dearie. Never. It was a gent named Pinto. Jaeger's Pinto. Oh, I'm a good judge of character and all that, dearie, but Mr. Pinto was my first mistake.
Oh, what happened?
The police came for that nasty little twerp the day after he'd moved in.
What?
That's right. With his fine manners and all, he turned out to be a common burglar. Smash it, grab man, you know. He got 5 years, as I understand.
Thanks, Mrs. Farland. That's all I wanted to know.
What was that name again, Mr. Mitchell?
Yegas Pinto, Inspector. He was picked up at 61 New Romney Road on May 1st, 1945. Smash and grab artist.
Served 5 years. That could explain why the package wasn't picked up from the basement. His present address is 924 Bexhill Place.
Hey, how'd you know that?
I've been checking up on you, Mr. Pinto, through quite another lead. You see, I've found Clara Fitzsimmons.
The maid who worked for the people who had the house on St. Margaret's Mews in 1945?
That's right. She's a barmaid now, and her married name is Mrs. Yeager Pinto.
Oh, brother. Hey, wait a minute. Did you say barmaid?
I did.
And just where is she working?
Can't you guess?
Yeah. The same pub where those people we arrested picked up their phony passports. The Blue Lion Inn.
Right.
Minutes later, Inspector Jellicoe picks me up in his car and we roll out to 924 Bexhill Place, the present address of our long-lost friend, Yegas Pinto. Stops raining as we pull up in front. We go inside and the landlord gives us the room number we want. Then, just as we start up the stairs...
Hey! Someone's shooting! Come on! Right!
Came from upstairs somewhere.
Back home, Senator.
Yeah.
Look, there on the floor.
Whoever handled that gun hit the bullseye.
I hope it doesn't turn him over.
We'll take a look at it.
Yes.
Looks like we're going to have an audience.
Now the other boarders, no doubt. Keep back, everyone. No need to come too close.
Yeah, now what's all that blinking racket about?
Good me. He's been done in.
Who are you?
Cathcart's the name, sir. Sam Cathcart.
You one of the tenants here?
Bet I am.
Blimey.
Will you please go downstairs, Mr. Cathcart? All of you, go downstairs and wait there. We'll be down to question you in a moment. And now, go along.
Yes, sir. Blimey. Done in right under our noses.
Well, Inspector, you recognize him?
Yes, Mitchell. He matches the picture I have of him. It's Yegas Pinto, and he's been murdered.
And now back to Dangerous Assignment and Steve Mitchell.
I set up headquarters in the parlor and got ready to question the boarders. While we waited for the first one to be brought in, the inspector said...
Now, what do you think about it, Mitchell? Was Pinto the man you wanted?
I don't reckon so, Inspector. I figure now that Pinto was not the passport forger. He was probably just his leg man.
I agree. The forger is also the killer, I'd say.
He killed Pinto to shut his mouth.
Yes. Well, let's hope we get something from the other boarders. Something that will...
Come in.
Oh, Cathcart, come in. Sit down.
Yes, sir. Blimey, this is awful, Inspector. The two of us was having a pint of beer up in his room not more than a few minutes before.
Pinto's room?
Yes. There was a knock on the door. Pinto went and opened it.
Who was it?
I didn't see. I was sitting on the other side of the room. I heard Pinto say, "Oh, it's you." Then he stepped out into the hall and closed the door. Well, I sat there several minutes, then, just as I was about to go and see what had happened to him, blimey, I heard the shot. I ran outside and down to the back hall, and, there was you two gents bending over his body. Phew, didn't half get a shock, I didn't. Blimey.
The person who knocked on the door, Mr. Cathcart, did he say anything at all to Pinto?
And not a word as I could hear, sir.
Then you don't know whether it was a man or a woman.
That I don't.
Very well, Mr. Cathcart, that'll be all. Oh, please ask the constable to send it to the next person.
Righto. Poor Pinto. Blimey.
Yes. Blimey. Well, he tells a straightforward story. Be interesting to know if it also happens to be a true one.
Right now, that looks like anybody's guess.
Come in.
You wish to see me, Inspector?
Yes. Your name, please.
Walter Michaels. I'm an insurance solicitor. I was calling on a client of mine whose room is on the third floor, Mr. Johns, but he didn't answer the door.
Johns? Let's see. The landlord informed me that Mr. Johns had left the house for the railway station half an hour or so before the killing on a business trip.
I say, what's the meaning of this? You've no right to prevent me, you know.
Looks like a bit of a riot in the hall.
I'll take a look. What seems to be the trouble?
Eh? Oh, this policeman will simply not allow me to go upstairs to my room. It's ridiculous.
Your name?
Johns, but I don't see what business
it is. Will you step in here a moment, please, Mr. Johns?
Well, all right. You'll even tuck at my sleeve. I'm out of shape with the damp as it is. Come.
Sorry. This is Mr. Johns, Inspector.
How do you do?
What sort of foolishness is this, Inspector?
Oh, just routine questioning, Mr. Johns. If you just put your topcoat on that chair...
Look here, I'm in a most frightful hurry. Can't I make you understand that? I was almost to the railroad station when I realized that I'd forgotten some important papers, so I hurried back. Now your man tells me I can't even go up to my room to get them. Since when has it
you
been...
You see, there's been a murder, Mr. Johns.
I said, since when has it been the... A murder? Quick, Scott!
Mr. Johns, you haven't said hello to your insurance solicitor here.
My what?
Mr. Michaels here. He says you're a client of his. He called on you while you were out.
What are you talking about?
Aren't you a client of his?
You see, gentlemen,
of course I'm not a client of his. I've never seen the man before in my life.
What's that?
Well. How now, Mr. Michaels?
Gentlemen, if I could speak to you in private...
By all means, Mr. Michaels. Oh, that'll be all for now, Mr. Johns. But I shall have to ask you to remain in the city and keep us posted as to your whereabouts for the time being.
What? But my trip...
Your trip will have to wait.
But it's a business trip. Now, see here, you have no right to...
That will be all, Mr. Johns.
I shall speak to your superiors.
Fine. I shall be glad to make an appointment for you.
Sounds like my old college yell.
Quite. And now, Mr. Michaels?
Johns is right. We're not acquainted at all.
So we get.
You see, I really came here to see Dora Mays. She has the room across the hall from John's.
Your girlfriend?
Yes. We had quite a row last night about my family. I had an appointment tonight to thrash the whole thing out, but she didn't show up.
So you came here to her room?
Yes, but she was out. That's where I was when I heard the scream.
Why didn't you tell us this at first, Mr. Michaels?
I was afraid it would get back to my family.
I see.
You chaps don't seem convinced, but that's my story. Take it or leave it.
Before we take it, Michaels, we'll check it. But Michael's girlfriend, Doris Mays, still isn't back, so for the time being, there's no way of checking up on his story. I'll leave Inspector Jellicoe at the rooming house to continue the questioning. I borrow a police car and head for Mrs. Pinto's flat to break the news to her about her husband's murder.
I always knew somehow he'd end up like this. I guess that's why I left him.
You were separated?
It's been a year now.
I see. Mrs. Pinto, as I understand it, you were a maid in the house on St. Margaret's Mews back in 1945.
That's right. That was where I first knew Pinto, before we were married.
Did he come to the house very often then?
He used to come to see me. Then one night he told me some wild story that he was some sort of government agent and was being chased by Nazi spies.
Brother, what a story.
I believed him. I was young and silly then. I let him hide down in the basement.
Ah, so that's when he ditched the package of phony passports.
What's that?
Oh, nothing. Go on.
Next morning he was gone. Later I learned he'd been arrested and sent to jail. As soon as he was out, he looked me up. I just started as barmaid at the Blue Lion then. He promised to turn over a new leaf, so we got married.
But it didn't last very long, huh?
I found out he was still mixed up in something shady, so I left him.
A year ago, as I said.
Did you see anything of him after that?
Oh, yes. He'd drop in every now and then at the Blue Lion.
But to see you?
That's what he said.
Well, maybe to carry on the business he was mixed up in. Well, what next?
Well, just a few days ago, the police were round making inquiries. I didn't say anything about Pinto, after all. He was still my husband.
You happen to know any of his friends?
No. I can't say I wanted to.
He ever mentioned the man or woman he worked for?
Well, there was a gent he always used to turn to when he needed a bob or two. Tracer was his name, I think.
Tracer?
The old Tracer will fix me up, he always used to say.
Hey, wait a minute. Tracer was probably a nickname, and it could sure fit a passport forger. That's probably the boy I'm after. Did you ever see him?
Not that I know. Pinto used to talk to him over the telephone, mostly.
Did you ever answer the phone when he called?
Oh, yes.
You think you might recognize his voice?
I might.
Is there a phone here?
No, but there's a phone box down the street.
Come on. I want to call the inspector and have him line up all the suspects for you to listen to. Mrs. Pinto puts on a coat and we go outside. I step into the phone box and the little light goes on. Just as I start to dial a number, I spot a glint of metal across the street. I hit the floor fast. I dive outside, but there's no one in sight across the street. Nothing but the mouth of an alley and the sound of some distant running steps. I could never catch up to him now.
Mr. Mitchell.
You okay, Mrs. Pinto?
Yes, sir. I jumped into this doorway when this happened.
Okay, come on. Got a police car down the street and...
What is it?
Mrs. Pinto, you told me you hadn't been out of your flat all evening, didn't you?
Yes, that's right.
Earlier this evening, while we were looking for Pinto, it started to rain.
Well, what about it?
It rained for just about half an hour. It stopped just as Inspector Jellicoe and I arrived at Pinto's rooming house.
I don't see what all this is
your
got to
coat
do with...
sleeve is damp, Mrs. Pinto.
Why,
you didn't tell me the truth. You were out of your flat this evening during the time it rained.
But... yes, I was.
Where'd you go?
I started for Pinto's rooming house to tell him the police were making inquiries about him. Halfway there, I changed my mind. I came back.
You sure you didn't go to the rooming house?
Quite sure.
Hey, hold everything. The damp sleeve.
What about it? I told you.
Yeah, you just told me the answer. I take Mrs. Pinto back to her flat and tell her to lock herself in. Then I go outside and slide behind the wheel of the borrowed police car, just in time to feel a gun barrel nudge me in the back of the neck. Well, well. That would be Mr. Johns, I presume.
Quite right, Mitchell. Keep looking straight ahead.
Okay. So you're the big cheese of the passport racket.
Stop the car.
If you insist.
Straight down the street. I'll tell you where to turn.
You've been waiting for me here ever since you took that shot at me in front of Mrs. Pinto's, huh, George?
Yes, I doubled around the block.
And I walked right into a trap. Afraid Inspector Jellicoe won't have a very good opinion of me.
That won't trouble you for long. Turn here.
Gilbert Place. Where are we heading?
A quiet room where you're going to phone Mrs. Pinto and have her join us.
Ah, get rid of both of us, huh?
Right. You may have seen me occasionally in the Blue Lion, and she's heard my voice over the phone. Can't afford to have her around. Left here.
Epping Square. This where the quiet room is?
Just keep driving. You'll find out presently. Mitchell. You knew it was me in the car as soon as you felt the gun barrel. How?
When you put on the act about storming back to the rooming house for some forgotten papers, I remembered the sleeve to your suit was damp. But you were carrying your top coat over your arm.
I see.
That meant you got caught in the rain without your coat when you went out the first time. Your plan was to make a departure, then sneak back and kill Pinto, which you did. You also picked up your top coat. That's what tipped your hand when you came back the second time. Only it took me until now to put the pieces together.
Rather neat. Now I... wait. Wait, that's a police car ahead of us. Turn around, quickly.
Okay.
Now back the way we came to the first turn right, then. No, it's another police car.
What do you know?
Slow down, I'm getting out.
Sorry! You're not leaving, John.
Let go of my wrist.
Let go of the gun. Drop it or your wrist goes with it.
No, no, I...
My, but you're hard to convince. Now, just sit back and we'll wait for our friends, the police.
But how could they follow us? How did they know where we were?
Real simple, Johns. This is a police car, remember? When I reached down to start the car, I also flipped the radio switch. We've been on the air all this time.
The radio?
Yep. You sang plenty. And that's how you got the business. Matter of fact, you might call it a singing commercial.
Dangerous Assignment, starring Lloyd Burrell as Steve Mitchell. This is a Grace Gibson radio production directed by Lawrence H. Cecil. Be with us again next week, same time, when Steve Mitchell will embark on another dangerous assignment. Baghdad, Martinique, Singapore, at all the places of the world where danger and intrigue walk hand in hand, there you will find Steve Mitchell on another dangerous assignment.